Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous... So I've basically been under house arrest. Well, I'm not under house arrest because I haven't been forced to be. I have been forced in a way by football to be in my house and looking at the telly all the time. And
really?
There's just so much on from the under 17 Euros, which I was watching yesterday. I watched back to back. Yesterday and the day before. So I watched the under 17 women's team losing to Spain in a heartbreaking deflected goal with the last kick of the game.
And then
the under 17 men. I like to think youths. Is it not youths? Do you say youths?
Yes.
Because you used to buy kit, didn't you?
There'd be
a side that was youths. And so I saw them join on there with Switzerland yesterday. And of course, there's been playoff stuff and there's cup finals and there's semi-finals. And
it's a shame in a way that there isn't an XXXL tournament that you could watch as well.
Yeah, that would be good.
They make the kit for it.
Yeah, and Robbie James tried to do it all on his own when he was at Stoke.
<Did he?
laughs> He's a big lad, the world's fittest darts player, we used to call him. But my favourite thing that's happened this week, Chris, is I don't know whether you saw, obviously David Moyes, who's gone from zero to hero, of course, in a traditional way. We had Sam Delaney on, didn't we, earlier in the season? It's big. We've had one or two West Ham fans this year, actually.
Mark Webster as well.
Yeah, Mark Webster, yeah. And there was much talk of it's time for Moyes to go, but now all of a sudden
he's been on the brink, hasn't he, week after week, but saved by alternate results all season.
Yes, exactly so. But there was a fantastic thing that I read that said that West Ham have decided, because of David Moyes' success, to give him the right to decide his own future. And you think, that's a fuck of a contract, isn't it? You get the right to decide your future.
Yeah, who's he signed this contract with? Mephistopheles.
I'm presuming so. David Sullivan, much the same thing.
It's a nickname.
No,
yeah.
I just love that. I love the idea. It's like a gift from a Greek god, isn't it? And somehow it'll go badly wrong for him, won't it?
Yeah, it seems like some of his pack have gone badly wrong already. The thing that amused me most this week was a statement, it wasn't a statement so much as a quote from Ali McCoist saying that Arsenal could be about to make a signing that would be bigger than Jesus. And I assumed he meant they were going to sign the Beatles. But But bigger obviously than Gabriel Jesus, he meant.
Yes.
Ilkay Gundogan, it was the name in question. But there was no sort of stink about it at all, the bigger than Jesus thing. Just no stink about it at all, which kind of suggests that John Lennon was right all those years ago, and religion was on its way out.
It does. Did you watch the Arsenal Forest game?
Yes,
because Gabriel Jesus, what a spoiled little fucker he is! Just so moany, wasn't he? And he does that fantastic sort of 4-year-old face.
Yes,
I can't believe you've done that to me.
And they did do it to them, didn't they?
Yes, I mean, you know, very sulky.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of the various things that have been decided. In football since we last spoke. Forest knackering Arsenal's championship credentials. And City managed to win the league, as they say, without kicking a ball. And if that isn't cheating, I don't know what is. Are they only doing headers, like some sort of Harlem Globetrotter thing?
Do.
Yes. Well, that would be great, wouldn't it? Harland running through with the ball balanced on his scrunchie.
Yes.
He's balancing it on his head. Just take the ball.
The Harland Globetrotters.
The Harland Globetrotters. Globetrotters.
Yeah. Actually, because, of course, then Man City got the point they didn't need at Brighton, didn't they?
And well, they got a point last night at Brighton, which was, as you say, you know, the house arrest thing. While there is still football, I'm still doomed to watch it. And I didn't mean to watch it because I don't really enjoy watching City. But actually, they were, partly because the games are never like, they never seem to be play a game that's competitive, that's properly competitive. And even against Real Madrid, they just bossed Real Madrid and it was so tedious to watch. But that Brighton game was just, it was really good fun, actually. It was a really good game to watch. And Brighton had more shots against City than anyone have had.
20,
in the last 4 years, I think. And they looked terrific. And Brighton are doing almost doing the David Moyes thing of alternately looking brilliant and getting thumped, but they look terrific. And goals scored by Enciso, who's still only 18, isn't he? Still only just a terrific goal.
Yeah. I mean, Brighton is starting to piss me off a little bit because there's been quite a lot of this. There was something that was somebody posted somewhere saying, "Oh, why doesn't everybody just admit it? Brighton are your second favourite team." And that Simon Says stuff, that's going to get me straight away. And the other thing is, actually, I think Brighton have done a great disservice to those of us, most of us, of course, that support teams that are ultimately going to let you down.
Yeah.
Which is that it was all right, wasn't it, for a bit when you could just claim that the teams at the top were there because of money and it was unfair and they were cheats and it was all bent and fixed for them. And then along come a bloody team like Brighton. You think, oh, God, no, it's possible to do something good by running your club properly. And that's somehow worse. I much prefer to be able to say, well, there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do about it. It's just not going to happen.
Well, but there is also the other side of that coin is the sort of faint whiff of heartbreak watching Brighton at the end of this season. Oh, they've qualified for the Europa League, but you look at their team and they're going to get ripped apart in the summer. You know, they're going to get cherry-picked.
But it doesn't seem to matter to them. And they lost Cucurella, they lost White, they lost Trossard, they've lost... I mean, they just get rid of players all the time.
Yeah.
And send seeming... And Bissouma is another one.
These are
all players who were in the team literally last year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in a way, they're a bit like Southampton have been for the last sort of decade or so, where as soon as they have a good... put a good side together, Liverpool buy them.
It
looks like that's going to happen to Brighton. That McAllister and Caicedo are are much sought after, as they say. And you look at that, the young centre forward they've got. You know, you can't tell me that he wouldn't be a better bet for United than Wout Weghorst. You know, he's a.
Thinking Weghorst, Chris, and your knees are.
I don't know. I think I'd be at best a similar bet.
Do you mean? Do you think it'd be a like for like replacement?
Yeah, exactly. I think they'd bring me on, but only to replace Wout Weghorst. They wouldn't ask me to do a job that anyone else was doing.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean. You know, and talking about the title being decided, you know, obviously, as the old saying goes, all that is needed for the triumph of evil is for Arsenal to do nothing. And that's basically what they've been doing for the last 3 or 4 weeks. But I think it was nice for City to have the opportunity to print out all 115 charges against them onto light blue paper and fire them out of a confetti gun in front of the home fans. It felt a bit funny. I don't know about you. It felt a bit funny watching all the celebration. I mean, there was film of them watching the Forest-Arsenal game, wasn't there, at their training base all together and erupting in cheers in the final at the final whistle, as if it was ever in doubt. It all felt a bit fake somehow, a bit sort of performative, a bit sort of forced, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't exactly an Aguero moment, was it? And then the sort of strange photos in the papers of Haaland celebrating. I am celebrating in my silk pyjamas with my tiny teeth. <You know? laughs> And really, it felt like the only appropriate image to put out to the world would be of them all steepling their fingers and going, excellent.
Excellent, yes.
But what do you think? What was it that happened to Arsenal? Was it just a psychological thing?
We now have two more players to add to the list of players bought by teams to secure the title for those last sort of 3 months of the season. Yeah. You know,
the Asprilla effect.
Roddy Marsh was another one, wasn't
he? That's right, Steve, yes, he was.
Steve Daly and Peter Shilton, indeed, at Stoke, when we were flying high and decided just the players that are going to get you over the line.
Just to nail it down,
Yeah, but what they actually do is pull you back. So I think, you know, you've got Trossard and you've got Jorginho there.
I suppose. I mean, they both looked like they improved things for Arsenal, Trossard and improved options, certainly. But I think there was a big falling off, wasn't there? There's a falling off of Thomas Partey, for instance, looked so impressive for the first half of the season and then somehow just dropped right off. And I think teams worked out in the second half of the season, teams have worked out that if you bottle up Bukayo Saka, if you double up on him, then you quieten them down. You quieten down there, or you slow them down. Quieten them down.
Yeah, he's definitely dropped off. And I think, as you said, I don't think it's you know, him forgetting how to play. It's just teams stopping him playing.
Stopping him from playing, yeah. And I think also, you know, Arsenal have reaped, you know, what you get for hiring Captain Black off of Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons to manage your team.
Yeah.
I mean, you must know you're going to have big plans. Things are going to look good for you for a while, but you're going to end up losing. It's a genre thing. They've fallen foul off.
Do you think also that they were sometimes put off by the little circles of light that went around following Captain Black?
Yeah. I think often those little circles of light, they ventured outside the technical area.
And
the whole thing was undermined by that. Yeah.
Yes,
I mean, City have had such a good run, haven't they? I mean, they had a draw, didn't they, like 12 games ago against Forest, and apparently had a meeting where they told each other, we have to win all our remaining games to overhaul Arsenal. But that just turned out not to be the case. They could have dumped 3 or 4, I think, as it turned out.
And you'd have thought you wouldn't need a meeting just to put across a message as simple as that.
You could
put a poster up on the wall.
That's true. You could. But I think one of the actually interesting thing, I mean, I don't really, as I say, I don't really like watching Manchester City very much, but the actually interesting thing that has happened after watching football for so long, to see an actual tactical innovation and see it come to fruition so blatantly, is the tactical switch of John Stones thing, the hybrid defender thing. I mean, and Guardiola had done this, hadn't he, last season with Cancelo playing at fullback and coming into midfield to be a playmaker. And then he fell out with Cancelo and has sold Zinchenko, who also kind of does it. And so it's like he was looking for another defender to step into midfield and change the game. And John Stones has done that, and it's worked marvelously well for them. I think they've won 18 out of 23 since they did that.
The first half an hour in the Bernabeu, he was just they didn't know what to do with him. Real Madrid was really. Struggled with him playing in that role, and those things are interesting. And
well, I mean, the apotheosis of it is what Liverpool have done with Trent Alexander-Arnold, isn't it, this year? Just a player who clearly could play in midfield, and now they've shoved him in. I think when he played in midfield for Southgate against Andorra, they played him. As an attacking midfielder, didn't they? And I think where he's thriving for Liverpool is when he moves from fullback to just the back of midfield, to be like a quarterback, to play the long ball. I think it's really interesting to watch. Something tactically different that shakes things up. The most recent tactical shift I can remember is like the gegenpress thing, is when all the players were suddenly pressing from the front, and I think that was Klopp's big thing, wasn't it, and other teams followed. But this is really interesting, and I think what's going to be interesting is whether Stones and Alexander-Arnold can do this sort of thing together for England. Whether you pick them together, or whether Southgate will pick one or other of them to play at the back of midfield, because we don't really have in midfield a midfield playmaker who plays deep, like a Pirlo sort of a role. And Alexander-Arnold can do that. You know, the playmakers that we have, like Grealish and Madison, tending to be played as part of a front three, actually, aren't they? But if Alexander-Arnold and Stones can play that role at the back of midfield alongside a ball winner, maybe, you know, that might be a whole new thing. I think it's just about the most interesting thing that's happened in the second half of the season.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Alexander-Arnold thing is funny, because I do remember Klopp slagging Southgate off something rotten when he played in midfield. But the other thing that interests me about tactical changes is the fact that I think in probably 50 years of watching Stoke, I don't think we've ever made a tactical change of any description.
What, before a game, during a game?
Ever. The amount of times you hear at halftime in the bar, people go, well, he's going to have to change it up. And you think, when? How? That's not going to happen. What I find is that almost all managers send out exactly the same team at the beginning of the second half to play in exactly the same way, no matter what the score is. Mm. And you think to yourself, well, he obviously thought it was all right that first half.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
He's perfectly happy. He's seen something that I haven't seen.
I think there's a tendency, isn't there, with a certain sort of manager, not wanting to pick out any because so many of them fit the bill, but where there's a willfulness about changing the thing because it means you've admitting you've got it wrong. Where it means admitting you've made a mistake, and they're not prepared to do that. And the number of games I've been to where a right winger has roasted our left back, and you go in at halftime, you think, well, surely they're going to pull someone across to the left hand side and double up on this winger, and they come out and it's exactly the same.
Thing. I always imagine all of our managers, time immemorial, if they'd been in business around the turn of the century, saying to their children, people are always going to want penny farthings. Don't you worry about it. They're still in this motor car business. Penny farthings. That's what they know. That's what they want.
The other thing about City winning the league is the sort of lingering cloud over City because of the 115 charges that have been brought. And Guardiola has been all over the papers just this week, wanting this case to be dealt with immediately. And he's going, tomorrow, sort it out tomorrow. No, yeah. This afternoon, sort it out this afternoon. Which is hilarious in a way, because it's been City who've been feigning cramp and kicking the ball away for the last 5 years, not cooperating with this, you know, wasting the time. And these 115 charges, the thing that, that gets me about them is that these charges relate to the period 2009 to 2018, which leaves a number of questions, doesn't it? I mean, not least, what about the period 2018 to the present day? You know, what about the last 5 years? Did they just stop doing the things, or did they carry on, but they just, they worked out that they can kick the ball down the, road?
It's such a cynic. People can be rehabilitated. People change, you know. Yeah. People are I want them to come out and read out the charges on a scroll of paper, like happens in The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. When they go, wanted for the robbery, armed robbery of citizens, state banks and post offices, desertion of his wife and children.
Absolutely. I think, I mean, he's right in a way, Guardiola. I mean, this shouldn't be allowed to hang over them like a dark cloud. These charges that relate to the time when Roberto Mancini was the manager, you know, and which is two managers ago. And obviously, if it was Watford, that would, we'd be talking about something that happened just before Christmas. But I mean, it would have
been rushed through if it was Watford.
But you know, he started also saying, "Oh, two more years is enough." For him as manager. And, you know, he could be gone before any action is taken, you know, about things that happened in 2009. And City have also been complaining, which is a slightly insulting thing, because the KC who's been put in charge is an Arsenal season ticket holder. And it's just a massively insulting to him, isn't it? To say, you won't be able to judge this case fairly on the evidence because you're an Arsenal season ticket holder. I mean, this is basically what Donald Trump does. Donald Trump asserts that he can only be judged by judges he himself has appointed, because that's why he appointed them, so that they would be in his pocket. And it's as naked as that. And, you know, I think this is a horrible thing, a horrible...
It's an awful, awful, awful thing, and presupposes that in judge school, I'm sure there is one, they all go around going, I'm going to be the fairest judge that you'll ever, unless Man City come into my fucking courtroom, I will stitch them up.
Yeah.
It's just a ridiculous idea.
Well, it's like we can only be judged by Mike Summerby, you know, is what they're saying. I don't know. I mean, I feel like this case will never be resolved. I feel like it's been 5 years, and football is not, the Premier League particularly, are not able to regulate themselves in a timely fashion. I mean, look at also, when you're talking about, you know, pending charges, look at Everton, who've been a basket case of a club financially for a while now. And 2 months ago, charged with breaching the Premier League's profit and sustainability rules. How can this be allowed to go on after the end of the season? Especially with, you know, it's down to 2 of 3, Everton, Leeds and Leicester, to join Southampton dropping into the Championship. How can that be allowed to happen? How can the games at the weekend be allowed to happen before this matter is resolved? You know?
Well, because that's what has always happened.
Because that's what always happened, yeah.
It's the equivalent of filibustering, isn't it? They know if they just keep stringing it out...
then they won't have to act. They won't have to act on it. No, I mean, and the other clubs have quite reasonably asked for the case to be dealt with swiftly and have threatened, you know, legal action. What if that happened? You know, Leeds and Burnley both tried it last season, didn't they? Demanding to see Everton's financial documents. And the EPL just refused to let them, like a kid shielding the answers to a test with his arm to stop you copying. Say, yeah, we've got them, but you can't see them. And this and City... the cases are the same in one key way. What is the point of having these rules if there is no immediate consequence for breaching them, which is basically cheating? And what City and Everton are accused of doing, whether they've done it or not, whether they can skip out of it or not, is cheating the other clubs. And, you know, this should be top of the list of things that the Premier League need to sort out.
Well, and it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, because the point is they make these decisions knowing that they won't get called on them,
yeah.
ultimately, that nothing yeah. is really going to happen, and so it's worth their while doing it. You get all this, don't you, with you know, naming rights of stadia and one of the big ones they do in Europe, of course, is football clubs owning other clubs, other in different sports. So Barcelona have basketball team, and who knows, ice hockey, probably not, but and what they do is that they can have the losses and the money all going
they
there.
Can spread,
and,
they can
and just
spread.
switch it all around. You know, I haven't even got a bank account, so why I'm talking about this, I don't know. I've got a secret drawer in which I have £12, and that will do for me. That's what I'm saying.
And I should let you know that I know where that is.
That's been. That's because you're my accountant. That's how fucking now stop I am.
That's how completely fucked you are. But you mentioned naming rights, and because it's in a similar area, to nobody's surprise, Newcastle shaping up to change their shirt sponsors for next season from Fun 88, which I always think looks like Fun BB. It always makes me think Fun Boy 3 is what it makes me think. Like the first 8 looks like a B and the second one looks like a 3. But anyway, to a body called Sela, S-E-L-A, which looks like a gaming company, but is not. But in a deal that will bring them $25 million. And Sela are a company involved in sports rights, theme parks and tourism, and are majority owned by the Saudi Public Investment Fund, which is the same body that owns Newcastle United. And this is precisely the sort of deal that football authorities have been agitated about for the last few years, since allegations were first made about Manchester City in that German football leak story that has ultimately led to these charges dragging on and on and on. It's a way for massively wealthy owners to channel funds into their plaything without having to deal with the messy considerations of financial fair play, profitability, sustainability, whatever they're calling it at the time. And Newcastle's rivals, all the other Premier League clubs, moved to tighten up the rules on owner-funded sponsorship deals in 2021 when the Saudi takeover was happening, afraid that this was a way they were going to use their financial muscle unchecked. And this is happening now. This is what's happening now. Newcastle are apparently confident they can demonstrate that the $25 million deal is a fair market rate for sponsoring the Newcastle shirt. As we know, if they break the rules, nothing will be done for at least 14 years.
You know? Yeah.
And counting. Because some of the charges to Manchester City relate to a similar thing, where they were paying Roberto Mancini to be employed by something else that was owned by the same people, as a way of not having to show his wages in the club's accounts. And, you know, this is what we need is an independent regulator with the, you know, when is that happening? You know, with the teeth to do things within the season that they're happening.
Yeah.
Within the season that they're happening. You know, City have already got the Premier League trophy in the getaway car and are disappearing over the fucking horizon.
Yeah. You need to be able to put down one of those stinger things that they'll have to drive over, and all the tires. They got away with the Mancini thing, though, didn't they? Because obviously he was being employed by a third party, which was Etihad Airways. But he did have to be an air stewardess at least 13 times during the year.
and you know, you say that's not a great hardship, but he has that nut allergy.
You've got to be careful.
In Italy, you see, they don't have the same compunction, it seems, about dumping penalties on Juventus, for instance, notably this season when all of their board resigned because of some sort of financial irregularities, transfer fee irregularities, which is essentially cheating. But they were given they've had time this season to be docked 15 points, to appeal that, have the points given back, and then for the appeal to be thrown out, and then docked 10 points again this week. So they've gone down from second to seventh. And
Yeah, I like the idea of the manager going to the courtroom and going, this is going to be a real 15-pointer, this one, I'm telling you. I think you can be relegated initially, can't you, for not being corrupt enough? I think that's one of the things.
Well, yeah, I mean, basically, you know, if you're Juventus and you you get an AC Milan season ticket holding judge, then you're fucked, aren't you? Yeah.
Well, exactly so. I was, by the way, just thinking back to what you were saying about the naming of the Newcastle shirts, and you rather had me with the they run Saudi theme parks, which I suddenly thought sounds like the most joyless day out you could possibly have. Baja Land. Or Khashoggi Falls.
What? Exactly. What? Oh, yeah, Khashoggi Falls. Yeah. The right, you can ride the bone saw, you know, just fucking horrible.
Yeah. Okay. What this one's all about is we've got three embassies here. Which one do you want to go in to get your marriage certificate? Okay. There are three possibilities.
Three doors.
You don't know who's behind which door. You might get lucky. You might get unlucky.
Oh, and this is this a virtual ride? No.
No. No. It's a big audience behind. They've come to watch it.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. No.
We should take a break. I think.
We're getting overheated.
Yeah. Well, you're getting overexcited, and I'm getting overheated.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Anyway, before we get too bothered about the outstanding issues in the Premier League, where it looks pretty much all over, frankly, let us first turn our attention to a competition where it really is all over. We don't just think it is, and it has been for some time. I speak, of course, of the Vanarama, and what an emotive word that has become for me this season, evoking as it does an endless vista of vans disappearing over the horizon and beyond. The very last knockings, which we have yet to discuss, occurred at the playoff for the second promotion place back into the league. Back, as it would be for either Notts County or Chesterfield, both league clubs of long standing until they dropped through the booby hatch 4 and 5 years ago, respectively. And a bit of a local derby this, so naturally, they hauled both sets of fans down to Wembley for the game. I was kind of rooting for Notts County because they'd got over 100 points, enough to win the title any other year, and so it would have been cruel for them to miss out. But that's football, though, and sometimes cruel is fun when it happens to someone else. I did also have a little bit of a downer on Chesterfield on account of one of their players, unnamed, allegedly assaulting Hallam Hope in the Boundary Park car park.
Was that this season?
Yeah. And
that
breaking
feels
his
like
eye
a long
socket.
Time ago.
He'd only just come back. He played a bit part in the last knockings of the season. But yeah, that was this season. Yeah.
And went round the back of the car park beat up one of your players. Yeah. That's just
And still no action has been forthcoming. I'm expecting the case to come up in about 14 years.
Yes.
Round about the time they sort out the Man City thing. But anyway, this game looked like being a tale of two dodgy keepers, didn't it, for a long time. Slocombe of County looked rattled by the occasion and in the opening minutes took a goal kick to himself which you never see, do you? Just took a goal kick and didn't get it out of the area, and there was no one there, so he went and kicked it again. And what is even the... You never see it. What's even the punishment for that? And it turns out it was an indirect free kick in the area. And luckily, his second touch was towards the edge of the penalty box, so there was room for a defensive wall, and they blocked it away. But if he'd only tapped it a little way and touched it again on the edge of the six-yard box, what happens then? Do they line up a defensive wall, like, just behind the line? Is that what they do? And hope that the whole ball doesn't go over before it hits somebody's shin?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it'd be great to see it happen to a team that you don't care about, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. And I'm presuming the manager came on and said, right, next time we've got a kick there, let the big fat centre-back take it. All right, son, because you're not getting it out of the area, are you?
I don't know what he was thinking of. I mean, he was completely scrambled, wasn't he? And he was clearly still shaking as he brought down Dallas for a fifth-minute penalty, which was duly converted. And so Chesterfield 1-0 up. Until a couple of minutes from the end, when the other keeper revealed his own dodginess, Fitzsimmons, a former Notts County goalkeeper, dived over a John Bostock free kick at the near post. Chesterfield went ahead 3 minutes into extra time, and having spent 85 minutes sitting on a one-goal lead, they settled in for another 27. Wasn't to be, though, and County made it 2-2. Whereupon, it became a tale of three keepers. County brought on Archie Mayer as a sub for Slocum in the last minute and as a specialist penalty-saving keeper, which is always amazing to see, isn't it, when they bring on a keeper who's apparently better at penalties, like a latter-day Tim Krull. They did it in the World Cup, didn't it? Is it Hiddink did it in the World Cup?
Yes, with Tim Krull. And there was always talk, wasn't there, that Besant should have come on in 1990?
Yes, yes.
If you remember.
Yes, yes.
Because Shilton, apparently, apart from being the greatest goalkeeper, apart from Good Max, that we've ever seen, isn't allowed to save penalties, in the common consciousness.
Well, he had a theory that is contra to popular belief, didn't he?
Which was
to wait and see which way it went and then dive after it. Spectacularly failed in Italian 90. Whereas Besant, as you say, had become the first keeper to save a penalty in the cup final, hadn't he?
Two years before,
was an enormous unit. Which was the case also with Archie Mayer. One of the things that you noticed when they brought on Archie Mayer was that he was at least, like, he seemed to be a foot taller than the guy who was coming off.
It was fantastic because obviously I hadn't seen him because he'd been sat on the bench.
Yeah.
And it was like you just wanted one of the dads from the other team to come across the gate and say, he's never under 13. He's never, you can't have that. But what I thought most reminded me of, for some unknown reason, because it did seem unfair. It did just seem like, you know, they'd got into the back and pulled out, you know, something that you shouldn't really be allowed to have.
Yeah.
But he was so tall. And I kept thinking, it somehow felt like cheating. And I know that's ridiculous, but it did. And all I kept thinking of, for some unknown reason, was Kenny Everett at the Tory party conference with those giant hands that he used to have. And thinking, are there any rules about the size of gloves? Because it felt like that. He could fill the whole goal, this bloke, couldn't he?
Bring on these giant paddles. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and amongst his, and he turned out, of course, to be a penalty specialist. I mean, it's hard to quantify what psychological edge you get just from coming on, just from the kickers thinking, oh no, they've brought on their penalty specialist. It's going to be that much harder now. Whether that's just the edge that you get just in the minds of the opposition kickers. But amongst his skills was the sort of fucking about that Martinez did in the World Cup, you know, kicking the ball away, hanging, taking his gloves off.
Did he get booked?
He got booked after like two kicks. He'd only been on for a minute of the game. And he got booked for the fucking
event. And Ivan Tony made 40 grand.
And what I did think of you during this, because Paul Cook, the Chesterfield boss, couldn't watch, went and sat in the dressing room.
Yes.
Do you see that? Which is also a very unusual thing, because it's not good enough, is it? I mean, you probably sympathise, but does the manager have any effect at all on the psychology of the team, or doesn't he? And his support is not utterly negligible, is it? It's not.
No.
It's not nothing to have the manager there encouraging you and say, good luck, son, or whatever, pat you on the back. It's not nothing, but he completely abdicated and went and sat in the dressing room. But anyway, so Mayer, the specialist stick man, saved two and looked bloody enormous. And Kedwin Scott, who had his penalty saved by Ben Foster at the very end of the Wrexham showdown towards the end of the season, scored the winning kick. So a little bit of redemption for him. And it should have been Bostock, shouldn't it, who scored the winning. He did a Panenka against the Bar.
It was quite a good penalty. I mean, I know it's
a foot away from being a good penalty. Yeah.
That when you miss a penalty, it could be a good penalty.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean.
Well, I was thinking, you know, because they always cook up a little trophy, don't they, for them to collect in these playoffs, and they get to go up and collect it, then if it Bostock had got the winning, it would have been Bostock's cup. That would have been the headline. But he blew it. He blew it, as did we.
Yeah. And the goalkeeper, of course, the goalkeeper didn't have to go up the steps. He could reach
got his medal.
Yes. exactly so. There were also penalties in the Salford Stockport game.
There were, that's right, yes.
I obviously enjoyed the fact that Nicky Butt was there with Roy Keane and all of that. But what I really liked was before the penalties happened, there was much discussion about how well Salford had prepared. Did you see any of this? And they'd watched. He'd made his team watch 1,200 penalties in the week just to get the idea of where it's the best place to put it. You know, time and again, you'll see that the goal is the best place to put it.
Inside the goal.
Inside. You see, look at the wooden. See the wooden. Anyway, in there. But what was brilliant was they kept going on about it and saying, well, they'll be so pleased. Their preparation has been impeccable. They scored one penalty.
Well, they missed the first one, didn't they? Matthew Lund missed the first one. And it was downhill from there. I was watching out for Matthew Lund because he used to play for Oldham a little bit. But there was a certain amount of schadenfreude in both the League Two playoffs, you know, the class of 92 missing out to Stockport, who came up from the Vanarama and blazing the trail for Wrexham to follow. But also in the other one, Carlisle missed out. Beat Bradford, which means that Mark Hughes missed out on a trip to Wembley. Good is all I can say about that. And Carlisle were like Stevenage, who won the automatic promotion. They were right above. They were one of the teams that Oldham were trying to catch and avoided the drop by a couple of points. And now they could bounce all the way up. So it's worth.
They just have Paul Simpson, don't they? Who keeps going back?
Yeah,
he's the returning saviour each time. And each time, you can't imagine they sack him or get rid of him.
Yeah.
Maybe we did the wrong thing.
He's like John Sheridan, isn't he? It's like the Simpsorection. If that doesn't sound as good as with John Sheridan.
No, he doesn't.
No, it really
doesn't work. But do you know this short termism? This Watford thing we've been talking about.
Yeah.
Have you seen that Lopetegu? I can never pronounce his name.
Yeah.
Lopetegu at Wolves is on
at,
about
at Volves. Yes.
At Volves. Yes. He's on about leaving, having come in to save them. And and this is something I've got from you because it's one of your favourite things. And I have this vision of him wandering out of Wolverhampton and somebody shouting after him, "Come back, Shane! Shane! Come back, Shane!
Pa's got work for you to do.
No.
And mother loves you. You know she does. She does. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So there were other playoffs, of course. We mentioned last time the Luton Coventry final that's coming up at the weekend. But there was a brilliant thing in the final, in the semi final rather, of the League One playoff, where Peterborough were 4-0 up on Sheffield Wednesday. And you know, no one's ever, apparently this was a statistic that was mentioned many, many times during this game, no one's ever come back from more than two goals in a playoff, in a two-legged playoff. And yet, Sheffield Wednesday 2-0 up at half-time and 3-0 up with 20 minutes to go. And then, you know, with 8 minutes of injury time played, even though the referee had only said six, they got an equaliser and made it 4-4. And it was fun to watch Fergie Jr. Getting stuffed by a bit of Fergie time. That was fun.
Yes. I enjoy that adding on extra onto the extra because there's a You know, maths is my first love, Chris. You know that. There's, yeah. there's a
not
complete...
country dancing anymore. Have you moved on?
Not anymore. No, no, no. Although, who knows tomorrow? But or indeed incest. you should try everything once, apart from country dancing and incest. I think is the thing.
Is the phrase? Is it?
Is the phrase?
Is it a well-known phrase of saying it? Fucking better be.
Yeah, I bloody hope so. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the last. As a percentage of the time added on to then add another 2 minutes,
yes,
you know, when you've only added four is ridiculous because I know it's possible, but
I know, but there is a thing, there has been a creeping thing where teams that have been time wasting see the number and think, right, that's what we've got away with, and then start time wasting like crazy and
stuff. Yes, it isn't without sense, but it just feels wrong. And when they do, and that, for instance, they add 9 minutes, you go, oh God, we've got just 9 minutes. You think that is 10% of the fucking game?
That's enough. Time. How long does it take to score a goal, Nick? A second.
I think it used to be. Certainly in the early 80s, it used to be a second.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is now.
Yeah.
That's
not Fergie time, though, is it? That's Brian Clough time.
That's what they were talking about. Yeah.
So Peterborough and Wednesday went to another penalty shootout, didn't they? And you look at the takers, don't you, for a penalty shootout, and sometimes you can see the flicker of self-doubt that will undermine them, or the fatal indecision. As you say, you know, how many penalties do you need to see in advance? 1,200,
I think you'll find it's now officially 1,201.
1,201.
That's what they've
exactly
discovered after this week.
Jack Hunt of Sheffield Wednesday took what turned out to be the last one. And I was struck by, I don't know when I've ever seen anyone who looked so certain he was going to score. You looked at him and he was just like, what's all the fuss? It's like he had a thought bubble hovering over his head. What's the big deal? This is going in. Watch me. Here it goes. Yeah.
And he did that thing of just running up and kicking it dead hard.
Just hit, booted
just
it into
really
the net.
Really fucking hard.
I want to tell you, I had a message from our friend Tom Craig, who's a big Wednesday fan, who is in Canada filming the very successful Murdoch Mysteries. And of course, it was the afternoon in Toronto. So he was on call working and filming scenes with Murdoch, the eponymous solver of the eponymous mysteries. And so in order to follow the game, because he wasn't interested early on, but then Wednesday were two up and he couldn't help himself and he got the eye follow on in his trailer. And he co-opted an extra who was there that day, who knew nothing at all about football. Or soccer ball, as I believe he called it, and to watch the game for him in his trailer and run into the set and tell him if anything happened, which it did, of course. And by the end, he describes him and this bloke hugging as though he was as big a Wednesday fan as Tom himself.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have made a convert over in Canada.
Absolutely. I mean, it was obviously an incredible thing to happen, and especially after Wednesday had seemingly fucked up the season anyway, because they should have gone up.
Well, they had 96 points, didn't they? And they'd be the first not to go up with that many, I think. And they could still, of course, if they lose to Barnsley.
And they'd beaten Newcastle in the Cup, you know, and it was all sort of February, it was looking great for them, and then it all sort of went pear-shaped. Although they did go through. But I watch a game like that where Peterborough have thrown away a 4-0 lead and then have pulled them back and just need not to concede, two more, and then they do. And I'm thinking, I'm Peterborough. Always. I'm taking no pleasure. I'm thinking, this is exactly what Stoke would do under these circumstances, with the possible exception of the winning the first game 4-0.
You're crippled by your empathy for the team that's going to stumble.
Absolutely, I am. And just very, very quickly to go back to the to the Carlisle-Bradford game, which was a great bit of commentary, just dropped in from nowhere. Whereas I think Carlisle's leading scorer, is he called Gibson, I think he was. I thought it was Simpson at first, but anyway, he was on the bench and hadn't been picked. And apart from Andy Cook, who I think plays up front for Bradford had been one of the most effective strikers in the league. And they said, well, he's injured, and then dropped in from nowhere. Not like it was a big story. He'd been injured in a collision with a training ground mannequin. Now, to me, I've been mentioning that every minute of the game. That's a fantastic story.
I didn't hear that. That's fantastic.
You can be so immobile that you can be injured by something that actually is immobile.
Yes, yes. It's like the joke about the team who are on a bad run and they trained against the dustbins. And only lost 2-1.
That happened at Newcastle. There's a very famous story about a training game in which they played the kids or something and lost 1-0 through an own goal or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember the full story, but an incident with a training ground mannequin is now my favourite sort of injury.
Various things that have been decided, West Ham will play Fiorentina in the Europa Cup, Europa Conference final after beating AZ Alkmaar and their terrifying ultras in the semi. Late goal from Fornals. One of the side interest thing about AZ Alkmaar was that they were using a Moneyball approach and actually had the original guy, Brad Pitt, Billy Bean, he's called this, and he's a part owner of AZ Alkmaar. And as in the film Moneyball, his team didn't quite make it all the way to the trophy. Yeah. But you must have seen the West Ham fan hailed as the Angel of Alkmaar, apparently single-handedly blocked a load of thugs from rampaging through an area where West Ham fans, families and players' families were gathered, like Horatio on the bridge.
On the bridge,
defending the bridge until it collapsed under the weight. Pardon?
Were the geese involved? It wasn't geese. Horatio awakened by geese.
Well, I think the actual fighting wasn't against geese. I think it was against Etruscans, led by the exiled Roman king Tarquin the Proud. But Knowlesy, this fella's called, Chris Knoll, greeted as a returning hero at the Leeds game, moaning in the paper that he hasn't got a ticket for the final. Then they're giving him a ticket for the final. And did you see this? There's an action figure of him on sale on eBay for currently £335, according to the paper this morning. I dare say it's been... if my computer wasn't playing up, I'd have looked to see... Did you see that thing? It's there.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yes.
Good bit of radio there as I show Nick the picture.
He showed me. Listen, he actually got his cock out.
Hey, stop it. No, with your incest jokes.
I found this whole thing fascinating because
it's
clearly,
kind of baffling, isn't it? It's
both brilliant and deeply disturbing. Yes. It's both right and wrong.
Yes.
It's all of these things. So I was I was following this story. There's a number of interesting things about it, I thought. Yeah. First of all, by the way, can I say I was the first person to say that he's an early contender for Sports Personality of the Year, and I think that would be brilliant if he won it. But here are some of the things that were really strange about it. One, no mention of the fact that the AZ Alkmaar families had been attacked at the London Stadium by West Ham fans after the first game. I think my mum said this, do two wrongs make a right? I don't think they do, but no. I can't remember. They either do or they don't, one or the other. Mm. And is one thing. But then secondly, there was much talk about this Knowlesy bloke, a lot of talk about him. And then a sudden realisation that by naming him, he might get banned. And so there suddenly started to be a lot of messages saying, no, it's not him. No, that's some other bloke. It's another bloke. And then people getting this wrong and going, no, that's not him. He was fighting at a different staircase, which doesn't work, incidentally.
I think the thing of him being like a heroically innocent stepping in to defend families and stuff like that. I think everything about him kind of plays against that.
Yes,
doesn't
yes,
it? I mean,
yes, least the love and hate tattooed on his knuckles.
And the one quote that they got from him, which was, "We live to fight another day," and you think, so you do. So you do. That is what you do. The thing that I liked about this story was, in the Netherlands, those who launched the attack were warned to hand themselves in by 4 o'clock yesterday, or else they would be shamed on the TV programme Opsporing Verzocht, which is information requested, which is basically Crime Watch.
Okay.
And some have already, this doesn't happen, does it? Some have already handed themselves in, apparently, not wanting to be shown on TV, only managed to give one middle-aged English guy one black eye while trying to wreak havoc, because it's embarrassing. They've handed themselves in because they're embarrassed.
I mean, let's not celebrate it too much. But having seen the footage, one of the interesting things is he doesn't seem to actually be fighting them at all.
No.
He's just got one big hand out and they can't get past it, which in itself is quite, impressive and slightly less sinister and violent and unpleasant. Strange stuff. Have you seen that that Manchester United are thinking of signing Neymar? I hope they do. I'm desperate for them to do it, because if they have Neymar and Anthony in the same side, they'd both be able to cover every blade of grass just in one challenge.
On their bloody arses.
One challenge, and they can roll all over the pitch.
Well, it'll be sad if Neymar doesn't go to Saudi Arabia and can't then be in the Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo sitcom. But except maybe as a guest, a one-episode guest. I was very taken by the prospect that Hugo Lloris might go out to Saudi Arabia and could be like a French, could be like their butler, could be like a French butler character, which would be cool. But anyway, so in terms of other things, VAR continues to infuriate, doesn't it? Did you see they had an experiment? This was a week and a half ago, where Howard Webb went on the Monday Night Football to try and explain how it works and play in the audio of the discussion between the lads at Stockley Park and the match officials. And it wasn't really particularly enlightening, frankly.
Not at all.
I mean, he clearly cherry-picked examples that showed VAR working perfectly, showing the handball that the ref gave against Arsenal's kid. Or do you remember that clearly hit his thigh and might not even have brushed his arm at all? So, hooray for VAR. They're the real heroes. But then after doing that, they've discovered a whole new area of absurd subjectivity to mine in the shape of with the Virgil van Dijk offside when the ball has come off the defender last. Now, isn't this a really easy one? You see whether it's come off the defender and that plays the striker onside, unless it's just glancing a pass that would have been offside from. But no, suddenly now we're dealing with whether the defender touches it deliberately, makes a deliberate move towards the ball. What the fuck has that got to do with anything? Why is that even a fucking thing?
Well, and of course, intent is an incredibly subjective thing.
Yeah, because if he's not trying to affect the play, what the fuck is he doing on the pitch?
Yeah, well, there's going to be a stage, surely, at which point referees are allowed to speculate whether subconsciously he was intending to affect the play.
What do they think? He's like daydreaming. He's daydreaming and he sticks his leg out. Oh, what happened there?
Well,
it's infuriating because it's one of the great, truths of football, that if a defender will play you onside. I mean, you remember that great goal that South Korea got in the World Cup against Germany, I think the 2018 World Cup, where the through ball seemed to be playing the South Korean striker offside, but then the close-up showed it was played through by the German defender, and so he was onside. And that's the fucking rule. It's not a question of intent. It's not a question of whether it's a deliberate thing. But somehow, now that we've got VAR, there's an element of subjectivity that shouldn't really exist.
Well, and heaven knows we've mentioned him already once today, but it's this is just making things more complicated, and it's like one of my favourite Cloughisms, which is, if he's not interfering with play, what the fuck is he doing on the pitch?
Yeah.
His job is to interfere with play.
Yeah, that's why he's wearing the shirt. That's why he's been.
Yeah.
That's why his name is in the programme.
Everything. Absolutely. I read, and I can't even remember which team it was, but because I was so taken with the idea. We were talking a couple of weeks ago, before last week's sadly postponed episode or tribute episode to Andy, and we were talking about end of season awards, and I wish I could remember which club it was, and it does slightly ruin it, but somebody had sent in something about their club saying, not only shouldn't they have an end of season awards, but he'd like to see all the players put in a giant wicker man and hit the set lights on a cliff. I love that idea.
That really appealed to me. That is harsh, isn't
it? It's harsh, but you'd watch, wouldn't you?
You'd watch, of course. But I mean, there's a and go along to hear the screaming and see what this smelled like. There is a recurring story, isn't it? The team that's had such a bad season, they're not even having a Player of the Year award. The relegated clubs.
Yes.
One player who's making a bid for a Player of the Year award this week was Mykhailo Mudryk of Chelsea. The huge money signing for Chelsea. Had a tough time since his big money transfer and the 8.5-year deal that he signed that they're already trying to winkle out of. But now he's uploaded this week a mocking video of an elderly bloke working out on a rowing machine at his gym. And now I don't feel sorry for him anymore. He can fuck off, can't he? I mean, you're young and fit. You're going to get cured of that, trust me, eventually. And I wouldn't usually go on the rowing machine. The machine I normally go on was occupied. The little Postman Pat van that you put 20p in was it was busy. So I wouldn't even have been on the rowing machine ordinarily. So he can fuck off.
No. And famously, you can't swim. The rowing machine's the last thing you're going to be on, Chris, is it?
Exactly.
That's a skill that you're not going to transfer out of the gym.
And so he's making fun of me for wearing a life jacket on a rowing machine in the gym.
Yeah, and actually, and feeling a bit sick.
I'm just saying
that. Just a little bit sick.
Has he never heard of authenticity? You know?
Yeah. You got skin in the game, mate.
Yeah.
Don't you? Hey, hate the haters, man.
Yeah.
Hate the haters. Hate the fuckwit. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Talking about relegation and end of season awards and all of that thing. You know, I think it's the opening to. Tolstoy book, isn't it, about all the happy families being happy in the same way and all unhappy families being unhappy in an individual
way. In different ways. Yeah.
And I always think, at this time of the year, I always think all teams that are being relegated look the same to me. Mm. You can see the fear, you can see the reluctance to have the ball, you can see the hiding away.
Yeah.
And I it's definitely an observable phenomenon. When we first went down, I mean, obviously, because you've just been relegated, you're going to have a lot of players in your squad who've been relegated recently.
Yeah.
That's the nature of the thing. But we then went out and bought like 12 players for the next season, all of whom had been relegated within the previous 5 years. And I honestly think it's like a dormant illness. I think once you've been relegated, the chances of you being relegated again are higher because you've accepted
the possibility.
Yeah. I've decided to refer to it because, as you know, the Bible's my first love. I'm going to start referring to this dormant illness as dropsy. One, because I don't think dropsy gets used often enough, and two, clearly it fits.
He was a goalkeeper for France, wasn't he, dropsy?
there was a
French goalkeeper. Yeah. And speaking of international football, it's nice to see that Gareth Southgate has called up Eberechi Eze. That's fun, isn't it? I mean, he's been looking great in recent weeks, and I kind of wondered. I think he's qualified for Nigeria as well, isn't he? I was kind of wondering whether he was going to do that, but no, it's great because he's such a wild card. And international football is such a sort of subs bench game, isn't it? So, and a player who can come on and change a game That's fantastic. And yet Sterling now is rested by mutual agreement, which is a bit like being sacked by mutual agreement, isn't it? Dropped by mutual agreement.
Yes.
Can I say I broke up with you?
Yeah. Mutually between Gareth Southgate, Raheem Sterling, and everybody else.
Everyone who's been watching Raheem Sterling play for Chelsea this season. But speaking of, you know, not performing at the level he expects, you know, that's why you've been dropped, Raheem. But, you know, what about, you know, Harry Maguire and Calvin Phillips, who remain, who've played 863 first-team minutes this season between them, and Calvin Phillips only started his first Premier League game this week, the Brighton game. And, you know, they're still there, but Raheem Sterling has fallen below the line.
Yeah. Well, you don't know what private conversations have gone on, and maybe he's
he doesn't feel fit, and he needs the whole summer off. And
maybe he's just going to start queuing up for the New Year's sales now. You know, maybe that's what he wants. You don't know what happens in the private lives of these people.
You know, maybe he's got a deal on a holiday villa, and he needs to go. You know, now.
Yeah, no. Exactly so. So we have to come before we scuttle off to the. I don't think either of us will be going to beaches. I'm certainly not going to a beach. Are you going to a beach?
I have no plans.
No, not me. I'll probably just stay here and watch telly.
There'll be an under 17 tournament on somewhere.
I would have thought so. And also, I've got to be available just in case Gareth needs cover. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We've got Champions League final to come up. We've got an FA Cup final.
The last weekend of the Premier League. The most expensive game in football on Saturday.
Yeah, we've got
Luton
that one
against Coventry.
Yeah. And of course we're going to all be able to see David Moyes flying under his own power above my house, because he has the right to decide his own future, his own destiny, That's what I think we all in the end want.
Do you think, given the chance to decide his own future, he's going to select the ability to fly without a plane?
I think that'd be up there, wouldn't it? That'd be up there. Let's be sensible about this. What would you choose, Chris?
I've always thought a cloak of invisibility.
That's a classic. The cloak of invisibility is a classic.
Or shape changing. Yeah.
I'm a bit of a I'm a traditionist in many ways. A horn of plenty. I want a horn of plenty. I've always wanted a horn of plenty. I've bought a few. They don't work. You know, you want the proper one.
It's the joke about the Irishman who finds a genie in a bottle on the beach, and the genie he says, I don't know. It offers him three wishes, and he says he doesn't know. Oh, I don't know. I don't know what I want. And I'd like a pint of Guinness. How about that? A pint of Guinness. And the genie gives him a pint of Guinness and says, this is no ordinary pint of Guinness. This will just fill up again and again and again, so you will never be without. And the Irish guy goes, that's fantastic. And what do you want for your other two wishes? I'll have two more of them.
Yeah, but you see, does it? It's not that mad, because you could sell them on.
Yeah, you could.
I'm just saying, you know, commerce is my first love.
That's true.
Clearly I do that. Yeah, no, a horn of plenty. But don't. And this is a final thought from me, and this is a gift. We don't do charging on this programme. That might change. We don't do charging on this programme.
Brackets, that might change.
Yes. But look, don't, and here's a tip for all of, I consider you our friends, don't buy horns of plenty off the internet. Don't do it, okay?
You can take that to the bank if only you had a bank account and not a drawer with 12 quid.
Exactly so. And also, you know, I've got four shrouds of Turin here. Stop presuming it's the real one. There may not even be a real one.
Yeah, you're going to have to ship all that stuff out when they bring that London Bridge round that you bought.
Yeah, that's right. London Bridge, you can go straight over the house. Saves me walking through in my dirty shoes, you see. Buying London Bridge is not that mad. Not easily hoodwinked, you know, Chris.
No.
That flies on me. Right, bugger off.
The classic ending. Sports Social Podcast Network.